Chapter 17. Choices. "We'll run for it," Rand said. "Huron, can you gallop and still follow the trail?"
"Yes, Lord Rand."
"Then push on, we will—"
"It won't do any good," Selene said.
Her white mare was the only one of their mounts not dancing at the gruff barks coming from the Grom.
"They don't give up, not ever. Once they have your scent, Grom keep coming, day and night, until they run you down. You must kill them all or find a way to go elsewhere. Rand, the portal stone can take us elsewhere."
"No, we can kill them. I can. I already killed one. There are only five. If I can just find—" He cast around for the spot he needed and found it. "Follow me." Digging his heels in, he set Red to a gallop, confident before he heard their hooves that the others would come. The place he had chosen was a low, round hill, bare of trees. Nothing could come close without him seeing. He swung down from his saddle and unlimbered his longbow. Loyal and Huron joined him on the ground, the Ogier hefting his huge quarterstaff, the Sniffer with his short sword in his fist. Neither quarterstaff nor sword would be of much use if the Grom closed with them.
"I won't let them get close." "This risk is not necessary," Selene said.
She barely looked toward the Grom, bending from her saddle to concentrate on Rand.
"We can easily reach the portal stone ahead of them."
"I will stop them." Hastily, Rand counted the arrows remaining in his quiver. 18, each as long as his arm, 10 of them with points like chisels, designed to drive through Trolloc armor. They would do as well for Grom as for Trollocs. He stuck 4 of those upright in the ground in front of him. A 5th he knocked to the bow. "Loyal, Huron, you can do no good down here. Mount and be ready to take Selene to the stone if any get through." He wondered whether he could kill one of the things with his sword, if it came to that.
"You are mad. Even the power is not as bad as this."
Loyal said something, but he did not hear. He was already seeking the void, as much to escape his own thoughts as for need.
"You know what's waiting. But this way I don't have to touch it."
The glow was there, the light just out of sight. It seemed to flow toward him, but the emptiness was all. Thoughts darted across the surface of the void, visible in that tainted light. Sidine. The power. Madness. Death. Extraneous thoughts. He was one with the bow, with the arrow, with the things topping the next rise. The Grom came on, overreaching one another in their leaps, 5 great leathery shapes, triple-eyed, with horny maws gaping. Their grunting calls rebounded from the void, barely heard. Rand was not aware of raising his bow or drawing the fletching against his cheek to his ear. He was one with the beasts, one with the center eye of the first. Then the arrow was gone. The first Grom died. One of its companions leaped on it as it fell, beak of a mouth ripping gobbets of flesh. It snarled at the others, and they circled wide. But they came on, and as if compelled, it abandoned its meal and leaped after them, its horny maw already bloody. Rand worked smoothly, unconsciously. Knock and release. Knock and release. The 5th arrow left his bow, and he lowered it, still deep in the void, as the 4th Grom fell like a huge puppet with its strings cut. Though the final arrow still flew, somehow he knew there was no need for another shot. The last beast collapsed as if its bones had melted, a feathered shaft jutting from its center eye. Always the center eye.
"Magnificent, Lord Rand," Huron said. I've never seen shooting like that."
The void held Rand. The light called to him, and he reached toward it. It surrounded him, filled him.
"Lord Rand?"
Huron touched his arm, and Rand gave a start, the emptiness filling up with what was around him.
"Are you all right, my lord?"
Rand brushed his forehead with fingertips. It was dry. He felt as if it should have been covered with sweat.
I'm fine, Huron." "It grows easier each time you do it, I've heard," Selene said. "The more you live in the oneness, the easier."
Rand glanced at her. "Well, I don't need it again, not for a while."
"What happened? I wanted to."
He still wanted to, he realized with horror. He wanted to go back into the void, wanted to feel that light filling him again. It had seemed as if he were truly alive then, sickliness and all, and now was only an imitation. No, worse. He had been almost alive, knowing what alive would be like. All he had to do was reach out to Sidine. Not again, he muttered. He gazed off at the dead Grom. 5 monstrous shapes lying on the ground. Not dangerous anymore. Now he can be on our... A coughing bark, all too familiar, sounded beyond the dead Grom, beyond the next hill, and others answered it. Still more came, from the east, from the west. Rand half raised his bow.
How many arrows do you have left? Selene demanded. Can you kill 20 Grom? 30? 100? We must go to the portal stone.
She is right, Rand, Loyle said slowly. You do not have any choice now.
Huron was watching Rand anxiously. The Grom called, a score of barks overlapping. The stone, Rand agreed reluctantly. Angrily, he threw himself back into his saddle, slung the bow on his back. Lead us to this stone, Selene. With a nod, she turned her mare and heeled it to a trot. Rand and the others followed, they eagerly, he holding back. The barks of Grom pursued them, hundreds it seemed. It sounded as if the Grom were ranged in a semicircle around them, closing in from every direction but the front. Swiftly and surely, Selene led them through the hills. The land rose in the beginning of mountains, slopes steepening so the horses scrambled over washed-out-looking rocky outcrops and the sparse, faded-looking brush that clung to them. The way became harder, the land slanting more and more upward. We're not going to make it, Rand thought, the fifth time Red slipped and slid backwards in a shower of stone. Loyal threw his quarterstaff aside. It would be of no use against Grom, and it only slowed him. The Ogier had given up riding. He used one hand to haul himself up, and then pulled his tall horse behind him with the other. The hairy fetlocked animal made heavy going, but easier than with Loyal on its back. Grom barked behind them, closer now. Then Selene drew rein and pointed to a hollow nestled below them in the granite. It was all there, the 7 wide colored stairs around a pale floor, and the tall stone column in the middle. She dismounted and led her mare into the hollow, down the stairs to the column. It loomed over her. She turned to look back up at Rand and the others. The Grom gave their grunting barks, scores of them, loud, near.
They will be on us soon, she said. You must use the stone, Rand, or else find a way to kill all the Grom.
With a sigh, Rand got down from his saddle and led Red into the hollow. Loyal and Huron followed hastily. He stared at the symbol-covered column, the portal stone, uneasily.
She must be able to channel, even if she doesn't know it, or it couldn't have brought her here. The power doesn't harm women.
If this brought you here, he began, but she interrupted him.
I know what it is, she said firmly, but I do not know how to use it. You must do what must be done.
She traced one symbol, a little larger than the others, with a finger. A triangle standing on its point inside a circle.
This stands for the true world, our world. I believe it will help if you hold it in your mind while you...
She spread her hands as if unsure exactly what it was he was supposed to do.
My lord, Huron said diffidently. There isn't much time.
He glanced over his shoulder at the rim of the hollow. The barking was louder.
Those things will be here in minutes now.
Loyal nodded. Drawing a deep breath, Rand put his hand on the symbol Selene had pointed out. He looked at her to see if he was doing it right, but she merely watched, not even the slightest frown of worry wrinkling her pale forehead.
She's confident you can save her. You have to.
The scent of her filled his nostrils.
My lord.
Rand swallowed and sought the void. It came easily, springing up around him without effort. Emptiness. Emptiness except for the light.
wavering in a way that turned his stomach. Emptiness except for Sidin. But even the queasiness was distant. He was one with the portal stone. The column felt smooth and slightly oily under his hand, but the triangle and circle seemed warm against the brand on his palm. Have to get them to safety. Have to get them home. The light drifted toward him, it seemed, surrounded him, and he embraced it. Light filled him. Heat filled him. He could see the stone, see the others watching him, Loyal and Huron anxiously, Celine showing no doubt that he could save her. But they might as well not have been there. The light was all. The heat and the light suffusing his limbs like water sinking into dry sand, filling him. The symbol burned against his flesh. He tried to suck it all in, all the heat, all the light, all. The symbol. Suddenly, as if the sun had gone out for a blink of an eye, the world flickered. And again. The symbol was a live coal under his hand. He drank in the light. The world flickered, flickered. It made him sick, that light. It was water to a man dying of thirst. Flicker. He sucked at it. It made him want to vomit. He wanted it all. Flicker. The triangle and circle seared him. He could feel it charring his hand. Flicker. He wanted it all. He screamed, howling with pain, howling with wanting. Flicker, 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 flicker. Hands pulled at him. He was only vaguely aware of them. He staggered back. The void was slipping away, the light and the sickness that twisted at him. The light. He watched it go regretfully. Light, that's crazy to want it. But I was so full of it. I was so... Dazed, he stared at Celine. It was she who held his shoulders, stared wonderingly into his eyes. He raised his hand in front of his face. The heron brand was there, but nothing else. No triangle and circle burned into his flesh.
Remarkable,
Celine said slowly. She glanced at Loyal and Huron. The ogier looked stunned, his eyes as big as plates. The sniffer was squatting with one hand on the ground, as if unsure he could support himself else.
All of us here, and all of our horses. And you do not even know what you did. Remarkable.
Are we? Rand began hoarsely, and had to stop to swallow.
Look around you, Celine said. You've brought us home.
She gave a sudden laugh.
You brought all of us home.
For the first time, Rand became aware of his surroundings again. The hollow surrounded them without any stairs, though here and there lay a suspiciously smooth piece of stone, colored red or blue. The column lay against the mountainside, half buried in the loose rock of a fall. The symbols were unclear here. Wind and water had worked long on them, and everything looked real. The colors were solid, the granite a strong gray, the brush green and brown. After that other place, it seemed almost too vivid.
Home,
Rand breathed, and then he was laughing too.
We're home!
Loyal's laughter sounded like a bull bellowing. Huron danced a caper.
You did it,
Celine said, leaning closer, until her face filled Rand's eyes.
I knew that you could.
Rand's laughter died.
I suppose I did.
He glanced at the fallen portal stone and managed a weak laugh.
I wish I knew what it was I did, though.
Celine looked deep into his eyes.
Perhaps one day you will know, she said softly. You are surely destined for great things.
Her eyes seemed as dark and deep as night, as soft as velvet. Her mouth?
If I kissed her.
He blinked and stepped back hurriedly, clearing his throat.
Celine, please don't tell anyone about this. About the portal stone and me. I don't understand it, and neither will anybody else. You know how people are about things they don't understand.
Her face wore no expression at all. Suddenly, he wished very much that Matt and Perrin were there. Perrin knew how to talk to girls, and Matt could lie with a straight face.
he could manage neither very well. Suddenly Celine smiled and dropped a half-mocking curtsy.
"I will keep your secret, my Lord Randolthor."
Rand glanced at her and cleared his throat again.
"Is she angry with me? She'd certainly be angry if I had tried to kiss her, I think."
He wished she would not look at him as she was, as if she knew what he was thinking. "Hurin, is there any chance the Dark Friends used this stone before us?" The sniffer shook his head ruefully.
"They were angling to the west of here, Lord Rand. Unless these portal stone things are more common than I've seen, I'd say they're still in that other world. But it wouldn't take me an hour to check it. The land's the same here as there. I could find the place here where I lost the trail there, if you see what I mean, and see if they've already gone by."
Rand glanced at the sky. The sun, a wonderfully strong sun, not pale at all, sat low in the west, stretching their shadows out across the hollow. Another hour would bring full twilight.
"In the morning," he said.
"But I fear we've lost them."
"We can't lose that dagger. We can't."
"Celine, if that's the case, in the morning we will take you on to your home. Is it in the city of Kyrian itself, or—"
"You may not have lost the Horn of Valyr yet," Celine said slowly. "As you know, I do know a few things about those worlds."
"Mirrors of the Wheel," Loyal said.
She gave him a look, then nodded.
"Yes, exactly. Those worlds truly are mirrors in a way, especially the ones where there are no people. Some of them reflect only great events in the true world, but some have a shadow of that reflection even before the event occurs. The passage of the Horn of Valyr would certainly be a great event. Reflections of what will be are fainter than reflections of what is or what was, just as Hurin says the trail he followed was faint."
Hurin blinked incredulously.
"You mean to say, m'lady, I've been smelling where those Dark Friends are going to be? The light helped me, I wouldn't like that. It's bad enough smelling where violence has been, without smelling where it will be, too. There can't be many spots where there won't be some kind of violence sometime. It would drive me crazy, like as not. That place we just left nearly did. I could smell it all the time there. Killing and hurting, and the vilest evil you could think of. I could even smell it on us. On all of us. Even on you, m'lady, if you'll forgive me for saying so. It was just that place, twisting me the way it twisted your eye."
He gave himself a shake.
"I'm glad we're out of there. I can't get it out of my nostrils yet all the way."
Rand rubbed absently at the brand on his palm.
"What do you think, Loyal? Could we really be ahead of Fane's Dark Friends?"
The Ogier shrugged, frowning.
"I don't know, Rand. I don't know anything about any of this. I think we are back in our world. I think we are in Kinslayer's dagger. Beyond that..."
He shrugged again. "We should be seeing you home, Celine," Rand said. "Your people will be worried about you."
"A few days will see if I'm right," she said impatiently. "Hurin can find where he left the trail. He said so. We can watch over it. The Horn of Valyr cannot be much longer reaching here." "The Horn of Valyr, Rand. Think of it. The man who sounds the horn will live in legend forever."
"I don't want anything to do with legends," he said sharply.
"But if the Dark Friends get by you, what if Ingtar lost them? Then the Dark Friends have the Horn of Valyr forever, and Matt dies."
"All right. A few days. At the worst, we'll probably meet Ingtar and the others. I can't imagine they've stopped or turned back just because we went away."
"A wise decision, Rand," Celine said, "and well thought out."
She touched his arm and smiled, and he found himself again thinking of kissing her.
We need to be closer to where they'll come, if they do come.
Hurin, can you find us a camp before dark? Somewhere we can watch the place where you lost the trail?" He glanced at the portal stone and thought about sleeping near it, thought of the way the void had crept up on him in sleep the last time, and the light in the void.
"Somewhere well away from here. Leave it in my hands, Lord Rand."
The sniffer scrambled to his saddle.
I vow, I'll never sleep again without first I see what kind of stone there is nearby.
As Rand rode red up out of the hollow, he found himself watching Selene more than he did Hurin. She seemed so cool and self-possessed. No older than he, yet queenly. But when she smiled at him, as she did just then,
Egwene wouldn't have said I was wise. Egwene would have called me a woolhead.
Irritably, he healed Red's flanks.
Chapter 18. To the White Tower. Egwene balanced on the healing deck as the River Queen sped down the wide Arranon under cloud-dark skies, sails full-bellied, white flame banner whipping furiously at the mainmast. The wind had risen as soon as the last of them was aboard the ships, back in Meadow, and it had not failed or flagged for an instant since, day or night. The river had begun to race in flood as it still did, slapping the ships about while it drove them onward. Wind and river had not slowed, and neither had the ships, all clustered together. The River Queen led, only right, for the vessel that carried the Ammerlin seat. The helmsman held his tiller grimly, feet planted and spread, and sailors padded barefoot at their work, intent on what they did. When they glanced at the sky or the river, they tore their eyes away with low mutters. A village was just fading from view behind, and a boy raced along the bank. He had kept up with the ships for a short distance, but now they were leaving him behind. When he vanished, Egwene made her way below. In the small cabin they shared, Nynaeve glared up at her from the narrow bed. "They say we'll reach Tar Valon today. The light helped me, but I'll be glad to put foot on land again, even if it is in Tar Valon." The ship lurched with wind and current, and Nynaeve swallowed. "I'll never step on a boat again," she said breathlessly. Egwene shook the river spray out of her cloak and hung it on a peg by the door. It was not a big cabin. There were no big cabins on the ship, it seemed, not even the one the Ammerlin had taken over from the captain, though that was larger than the rest. With its two beds built into the walls, shelves beneath them and cabinets above, everything lay close to hand. Except for keeping her balance, the movements of the ship did not bother her the way they did Nynaeve. She had given up offering Nynaeve food after the third time the wisdom threw the bowl at her. "I'm worried about Rand," she said. "I'm worried about all of them," Nynaeve replied dully. After a moment, she said, "Another dream last night? The way you've been staring at nothing since you got up." Egwene nodded. She had never been very good at keeping things from Nynaeve, and she had not tried with the dreams. Nynaeve had tried to dose her at first, until she heard one of the Aes Sedai was interested. Then she began to believe. "It was like the others. Different, but the same. Rand is in some kind of danger. I know it. And it is getting worse. He's done something, or he's going to do something that puts him in..." She dropped down on her bed and leaned toward the other woman. "I just wish I could make some sense of it." "Channeling?" Nynaeve said softly. Despite herself, Egwene looked around to see if anyone was there to hear. They were alone, with the door closed, but still she spoke just as softly. "I don't know. Maybe." There was no telling what Aes Sedai could do. She had seen enough already to make her believe every story of their powers, and she would not risk eavesdropping. "I won't risk Rand. If I did right, I'd tell them, but Moiraine knows and she hasn't said anything, and it's Rand. I can't. I don't know what to do." "Has Anaya said anything more about these dreams?" Nynaeve seemed to make it a point never to add the honorific Sedai, even when the two of them were alone. Most of the Aes Sedai appeared not to care, but the habit had earned a few strange looks, and some hard ones. She was going to train in the White Tower, after all. "The wheel weaves as the wheel wills," Egwene quoted Anaya. "The boy is far away, child, and there's nothing we can do until we know more. I will see to testing you myself once we reach the White Tower, child." "Ah! She knows there is something in these dreams. I can tell she does. I like the woman, Nynaeve. I do. But she won't tell me what I want to know. And I can't tell her everything. Maybe if I could... The man in the mask again? Egwene nodded. Somehow she was sure it was better not to tell Anaya about him. She could not imagine why, but she was sure. 3 times the man whose eyes were fire had been in her dreams, each time when she dreamed a dream that convinced her Rand was in danger. He always wore a mask across his face. Sometimes she could see his eyes, and sometimes she could only see fire where they should be. He laughed at me. It was so contemptuous, as though I were a puppy he was going to have to push out of his way with his foot. It frightens me. He frightens me. Are you sure it has anything to do with the other dreams, with Rand? Sometimes a dream is just a dream. Egwene threw up her hands. And sometimes, Nynaeve, you sound just like Anaya Sedai. She put a special emphasis on the title and was pleased to see Nynaeve grimace. If I ever get out of this bed, Egwene. A knock at the door cut off whatever Nynaeve had been going to say. Before Egwene could speak or move, the Amyrlin herself came in and shut the door behind her. She was alone, for a wonder. She seldom left her cabin, and then always with Lyanna at her side, and maybe another of the Aes Sedai. Egwene sprang to her feet. The room was a little crowded with 3 of them in it. "Both of you feeling well?" the Amyrlin said cheerily. She tilted her head at Nynaeve. "Eating well, too, I trust? In good temper?" Nynaeve struggled to a sitting position with her back against the wall. "My temper is just fine, thank you." "We are honored, Mother," Egwene began, but the Amyrlin waved her to silence. "It's good to be on the water again, but it grows boring as a mill pond after a while with nothing to do." The ship heeled, and she shifted her balance without seeming to notice. "I will give you your lesson today." She folded herself onto the end of Egwene's bed, feet tucked under her. "Sit, child." Egwene sat, but Nynaeve began trying to push herself to her feet. "I think I will go on deck." "I said sit!" The Amyrlin's voice cracked like a whip, but Nynaeve kept rising, wavering. She still had both hands on the bed, but she was almost upright. Egwene held herself ready to catch her when she fell. Closing her eyes, Nynaeve slowly lowered herself back to the bed. "Perhaps I will stay. It is no doubt windy up there." The Amyrlin barked a laugh. "They told me you had a temper in you like a fisher bird with a bone in its throat. Some of them, child, say you'd do well for some time as a novice, no matter how old you are. I say, if you have the ability I hear of, you deserve to be one of the accepted." She gave another laugh. "I always believe in giving people what they deserve. Yes, I suspect you will learn a great deal once you reach the White Tower." "I'd rather one of the warders taught me how to use a sword," Nynaeve growled. She swallowed convulsively and opened her eyes. "There is someone I'd like to use it on." Egwene looked at her sharply. Did Nynaeve mean the Amyrlin, which was stupid and dangerous besides, or Lan? She snapped at Egwene every time Lan was mentioned. "A sword," the Amyrlin said. "I never thought swords were much use, even if you have the skill, child. There are always men who have as much and a deal more strength. But if you want a sword..." She held up her hand. Egwene gasped, and even Nynaeve's eyes bulged, and there was a sword in it. With blade and hilt of an odd bluish white, it looked somehow cold. "Made from the air, child, with air. It's as good as most steel blades, better than most, but still not much use." The sword became a paring knife. There was no shrinking. It just was one thing, then the other. "This now is useful." The paring knife turned to mist, and the mist faded away. The Amyrlin put her empty hand back in her lap. "But either takes more effort than it is worth. Better, easier, simply, to carry a good knife with you. You have to learn when to use your ability as well as how, and when it's better to do things the way any other woman would. Let a blacksmith make knives for gutting fish. Use the one power too often and too freely, and you can come to like it too much. That way lies danger. You begin to want more of it, and sooner or later you run the risk of drawing more than you've learned to handle. and that can burn you out like a guttered candle. Or, if I must learn all this, Nynaeve broke in stiffly, I would as soon learn something useful. All this... Make the air stir, Nynaeve. Light the candle, Nynaeve. Now put it out. Light it again. Pah! Egwene closed her eyes for a moment. Please, Nynaeve. Please keep a check on your temper. She bit her lip to keep from saying it out loud. The Amyrlin was silent for a moment. Useful, she said at last. Something useful. You wanted a sword. Suppose a man came at me with a sword. What would I do? Something useful, you can be sure. This, I think. For an instant, Egwene thought she saw a glow around the woman at the other end of her bed. Then the air seemed to thicken. Nothing changed that Egwene could see, but she could surely feel it. She tried to lift her arm. It did not budge any more than if she were buried to her neck in thick jelly. Nothing could move except her head.
Release me! Nynaeve grated.
Her eyes glared and her head jerked from side to side, but the rest of her sat as rigidly as a statue. Egwene realized that she was not the only one held.
Let me go!
Useful, wouldn't you say? And it is nothing but air. The Amyrlin spoke in a conversational tone as if they were all chatting over tea.
Big man with his muscles and his sword, and the sword does him as much good as the hair on his chest. Let me go, I say.
And if I don't like where he is, why, I can pick him up. Nynaeve squawked furiously as she slowly rose, still in a sitting position, until her head almost touched the ceiling. The Amyrlin smiled. I've often wished I could use this to fly. The records say Aes Sedai could fly in the Age of Legends, but they aren't clear on how exactly. Not this way, though. It doesn't work like that. You might reach out with your hands and pick up a chest that weighs as much as you do. You look strong. But take hold of yourself however you will, you cannot pick yourself up. Nynaeve's head jerked furiously, but not another muscle of her twitched.
The light burn you, let me go!
Egwene swallowed hard and hoped she was not also to be lifted. So, the Amyrlin continued,
big, hairy man, and so forth. He can do nothing to me, while I can do anything at all to him. Why? If I had a mind to...
She leaned forward, her eyes intent on Nynaeve. Suddenly her smile did not seem very friendly.
I could turn him upside down and paddle his bottom. Just like...
Suddenly the Amyrlin flew backwards so hard, her head rebounded from the wall, and there she stayed, as if something were pressing against her. Egwene stared, her mouth dry. This isn't happening. It isn't.
They were right, the Amyrlin said.
Her voice sounded strained, as though she found it hard to breathe.
They said you learned quickly, and they said it took your temper burning to get to the heart of what you can do.
She took a struggling breath.
Shall we release each other together, child?
Nynaeve, floating in the air with her eyes ablaze, said,
You let me go right now or I'll...
Abruptly, a look of amazement came over her face, a look of loss. Her mouth worked silently. The Amyrlin sat up, working her shoulders.
You don't know everything yet, do you, child?
Not the hundredth part of everything. You did not suspect I could cut you off from the true source. You can still feel it there, but you can't touch it any more than a fish can touch the moon. When you learn enough to be raised to full sisterhood, no one woman will be able to do that to you. The stronger you become, the more Aes Sedai it will take to shield you against your will. Do you think now you want to learn? Nynaeve pressed her mouth shut in a thin line and stared her in the eye grimly. The Amyrlin sighed.
If you had a hair less potential than you do, child, I would send you to the Mistress of Novices and tell her to keep you the rest of your life. But you will get what you deserve.
Nynaeve's eyes widened, and she had just time to start a yell before she dropped, hitting her bed with a loud thud. Egwene winced. The mattresses were thin and the wood beneath hard. Nynaeve's face stayed frozen as she shifted the way she sat,
just a fraction. And now, the Ammerlin said firmly, unless you would like further demonstration, we will get on with your lesson. Continue your lesson, we might say. Mother, Egwene said faintly. She still could not twitch below her chin. The Ammerlin looked at her questioningly, then smiled. Oh, I am sorry, child. Your friend was occupying my attention, I'm afraid. Suddenly, Egwene could move again. She raised her arms just to convince herself that she could. Are you both ready to learn? Yes, Mother, Egwene said quickly. The Ammerlin raised an eyebrow at Nynaeve. After a moment, Nynaeve said in a tight voice, Yes, Mother. Egwene heaved a sigh of relief. Good. Now then, empty your thoughts of everything but a flower bud. Egwene was sweating by the time the Ammerlin left. She had thought that some of the other Aes Sedai had been hard teachers, but that smiling, plain-faced woman coaxed out every last drop of effort, drew it out, and when there was nothing left, she seemed to reach into you and pulled it out. It had gone well, though. As the door closed behind the Ammerlin, Egwene raised one hand. A tiny flame sprang to life, balanced a hair-breadth above the tip of her forefinger, then danced from fingertip to fingertip. She was not supposed to do this without a teacher, one of the accepted at the very least, to watch over her, but she was too excited at her progress to pay any mind to that. Nynaeve bounded to her feet and threw her pillow at the closing door. That vile, contemptible, miserable hag! The light burn her! I'd like to feed her to the fish! I'd like to dose her with things that would turn her green for the rest of her life. I don't care if she's old enough to be my mother. If I had her in Emmons Field, she wouldn't sit down comfortably for... Her teeth ground so loudly that Egwene jumped. Letting the flame die, Egwene put her eyes firmly on her lap. She wished she could think of a way to sneak out of the room without catching Nynaeve's eye. The lesson had not gone well for Nynaeve, because she had held her temper on a tight lead until the Ammerlin was gone. She never could do very much unless she was angry, and then it all burst out of her. After failure upon failure, the Ammerlin had done everything she could to rouse her again. Egwene wished Nynaeve could forget she had been there to see or hear any of it. Nynaeve stalked stiffly to her bed and stood staring at the wall behind it, her fist clenched at her side. Egwene looked longingly at the door. It was not your fault, Nynaeve said, and Egwene gave a start. Nynaeve turned to look down at her. It was not your fault, she repeated, sounding unconvinced. But if you ever breathe one word, I'll... Not a word, Egwene said quickly. I don't even remember anything to breathe a word about. Nynaeve stared at her a moment longer, then nodded. Abruptly, she grimaced. Light. I did not think anything tasted worse than raw sheep's tongue root. I'll remember that the next time you act the goose, so watch yourself. Egwene winced. That had been the first thing the Ammerlin had done trying to rouse Nynaeve's anger. A dark glob of something that glistened like grease and smelled vile had suddenly appeared, and while the Ammerlin held Nynaeve with the power, had been forced into the wisdom's mouth. The Ammerlin had even held her nose to make her swallow. And Nynaeve remembered things, if she had seen them done once. Egwene did not think there was any way of stopping her if she took it into her mind to do it. For all her own success in making a flame dance, she could never have held the Ammerlin against a wall. At least being on the ship isn't making you sick anymore. Nynaeve grunted, then gave a short, sharp laugh. I'm too angry to be sick. With another mirthless laugh, she shook her head. I'm too miserable to be sick. Light, I feel as if I've been dragged through a knothole backwards. If that is what novice training is like, you will have incentive to learn quickly. Egwene scowled at her knees. Compared to Nynaeve, the Ammerlin had only coaxed her, smiled at her successes, sympathized with her failures, then coaxed again. But all the Aes Sedai had said things would be different in the White Tower. Harder, though they would not say how. If she had to go through what Nynaeve had, day after day, she did not think she could stand it. Something changed in the motion of the ship. The rocking eased,
and feet thumped on the deck above their heads. A man shouted something Egwene could not quite make out. She looked up at Nynaeve. "Do you think? Tar Valon?" "There is only one way to find out," Nynaeve replied, and determinedly took her cloak from its peg. When they reached the deck, sailors were running everywhere, heaving at lines, shortening sail, readying long sweeps. The wind had died to a breeze, and the clouds were scattering now. Egwene rushed to the rail. "It is! It is Tar Valon!" Nynaeve joined her with an expressionless face. The island was so big, it looked more as if the river split in two than contained a bit of land. Bridges that seemed to be made of lace arched from either bank to the island, crossing marshy ground as well as the river. The walls of the city, the shining walls of Tar Valon, glistened white as the sun broke through the clouds. And on the west bank, its broken top leaking a thin wisp of smoke, Dragonmount reared black against the sky, one mountain standing among flatlands and rolling hills. Dragonmount, where the dragon had died. Dragonmount, made by the dragon's dying. Egwene wished she did not think of Rand when she looked at the mountain. A man channeling. Light help him. The River Queen passed through a wide opening in a tall, circular wall that thrust out into the river. Inside, one long wharf surrounded a round harbor. Sailors furled the last sails and used sweeps alone to move the ship stern first to its docking. Around the long wharf, the other ships that had come downriver were now being snugged into their berths among the ships already there. The white flame banners set workers scurrying along the already busy wharf. The Ammerlin came on deck before the shorelines were tied off, but dock workers ran a gangplank aboard as soon as she appeared. Lyanna walked at her side, flame-tipped staff in hand, and the other Aes Sedai on the ship followed them ashore. None of them so much as glanced at Egwene or Nynaeve. On the wharf, a delegation greeted the Ammerlin, shawled Aes Sedai bowing formally, kissing the Ammerlin's ring. The wharf bustled between ships unloading and the Ammerlin's seat arriving. Soldiers formed up on disembarking. Men set booms for cargo. Trumpet flourishes rang from the walls, competing with cheers from the onlookers. Nynaeve gave a loud sniff. "It seems they've forgotten us. Come along, we'll see to ourselves." Egwene was reluctant to leave her first sight of Tar Valon, but she followed Nynaeve below to gather their things. When they came back topside, bundles in their arms, soldiers and trumpets were gone, and Aes Sedai too. Men were swinging back hatches along the deck and lowering cables into the holds. On the deck, Nynaeve caught a dockman's arm, a burly fellow in a coarse brown shirt with no sleeves. "Our horses," she began. "I'm busy," he growled, pulling free. "Horses'll all be took to the White Tower." He looked them up and down. "If you've business with the tower, best you take yourselves on. Aes Sedai don't hold with newlings being tardy." Another man, wrestling with a bale being swung out of the hold on a cable, shouted to him, and he left the women without a backwards glance. Egwene exchanged looks with Nynaeve. It seemed they really were on their own. Nynaeve stalked off the ship with grim determination on her face, but Egwene made her way dejectedly down the gangplank and through the tarry smell that hung over the wharf. "All that talk about wanting us here, and now they don't seem to care." Broad stairs led up from the dock to a wide arch of dark redstone. On reaching it, Egwene and Nynaeve stopped to stare. Every building seemed a palace, though most of those close to the arch seemed to contain inns or shops from the signs over the doors. Fanciful stonework was everywhere, and the lines of one structure seemed designed to complement and set off the next, leading the eye along as if everything were part of one vast design. Some structures did not look like buildings at all, but like gigantic waves breaking, or huge shells, or fanciful wind-sculpted cliffs. Right in front of the arch lay a broad square, with a fountain and trees, and Egwene could see another square further on. Above everything rose the towers, tall and graceful, some with sweeping bridges behind them, high in the sky. And over all rose one tower, higher and wider than all the rest, as white as the shining walls themselves.
Fair takes the breath at first sight, said a woman's voice behind them. At tenth sight for that, and at hundredth. Egwene turned. The woman was Aes Sedai. Egwene was sure of it, though she wore no shawl. No one else had that ageless look, and she held herself with an assurance, a confidence that seemed to confirm it. A glance at her hand showed the golden ring, the serpent biting its own tail. The Aes Sedai was a little plump, with a warm smile, and one of the oddest-appearing women Egwene had ever seen. Her plumpness could not hide high cheekbones. Her eyes had a tilt to them, and were the clearest, palest green, and her hair was almost the color of fire. Egwene barely stopped herself from goggling at that hair, those slightly slanted eyes. Ogier built, of course, the Aes Sedai went on. And their best work ever, some say. One of the first cities built after the breaking. There weren't 500,000 people here altogether then, no more than 20 sisters, but they built for what would be needed. It is a lovely city, Nynaeve said. We are supposed to go to the White Tower. We came here for training, but no one seems to care if we go or stay. They care, the woman said, smiling. I came here to meet you, but I was delayed speaking with the Amyrlin. I am Shiriam, the mistress of novices. I am not to be a novice, Nynaeve said in a firm voice, but a little too quickly. The Amyrlin herself said I was to be one of the accepted. So I was told, Shiriam sounded amused. I have never heard of it being done so before, but they say you are exceptional. Remember, though, even one of the accepted can be called to my study. It requires more breaking of the rules than for a novice, but it has been known to happen. She turned to Egwene as if she had not seen Nynaeve frown. And you are our new novice. It is always good to see a novice come. We have too few these days. You will make 40. Only 40. And no more than 8 or 9 of those will be raised to the accepted. Though I don't think you will have to worry about that too much, if you work hard and apply yourself. The work is hard, and even for one with the potential they tell me you have, it will not be made any easier. If you cannot stick to it, no matter how hard it is, or if you will break under the strain, better we find it out now and let you go on your way, than wait until you are a full sister and others are depending on you. An Aes Sedai's life is not easy. Here we will prepare you for it, if you have in you what is required. Egwene swallowed. Break under the strain? I will try, Shiriam Sedai, she said faintly. And I will not break. Nynaeve looked at her worriedly. Shiriam, she stopped and took a deep breath. Shiriam Sedai, she seemed to force the honorific out. Does it have to be so hard on her? Flesh and blood can only take so much. I know something of what novices must go through. Surely there's no need to try to break her just to find out how strong she is. You mean what the Amyrlin did to you today? Nynaeve's back stiffened. Shiriam looked as though she were trying to keep amusement from her face. I told you I spoke with the Amyrlin. Rest your worries for your friend. Novice training is hard, but not that hard. That is for the first few weeks of being one of the accepted. Nynaeve's mouth fell open. Egwene thought the wisdom's eyes were going to come right out of her head. To catch the few who might have slipped through novice training when they should not have. We cannot risk having one of our number, a full Aes Sedai, who will break under the stress of the world outside. The Aes Sedai gathered them both up, an arm around the shoulders of each. Nynaeve hardly seemed to realize where she was going. Come, Shiriam said. I will see you settled in your rooms. The White Tower awaits.
Chapter 19. Beneath the Dagger. Night on the edge of Kinslayer's Dagger was cold, as nights in the mountains are always cold. The wind whipped down from the high peaks, carrying the iciness of the snowcaps. Rand shifted on the hard ground, tugging at his cloak and blanket, and only half asleep. His hand went to his sword, lying beside him. One more day, he thought drowsily. Just one more, and then we go.
If no one comes tomorrow, Ingtar or Dark Friends 1, I'll take Celine to Kyrian. He had told himself that before. Every day they had been there on the mountainside, watching the place where Huron said the trail had been, in that other world, where Celine said the Dark Friends would surely appear in this world, he told himself it was time to leave. And Celine talked of the Horn of Valir and touched his arm and looked into his eyes, and before he knew it, he had agreed to yet another day before they went on. He shrugged against the chill of the wind, thinking of Celine touching his arm and looking into his eyes. If Egwene saw that, she'd shear me for a sheep, and Celine too. Egwene could already be in Tar Valon by now, learning to be an Aes Sedai. The next time she sees me, she'll probably try to gentle me. As he shifted over, his hand slid past the sword and touched the bundle holding Tom Marilyn's harp and flute. Unconsciously, his fingers tightened on the gleeman's cloak. I was happy then, I think, even running for my life, playing the flute for my supper. I was too ignorant to know what was going on. There's no turning back. Shivering, he opened his eyes. The only light came from the waning moon, not far past full and low in the sky. A fire would give them away to those for whom they watched. Loyal muttered in his sleep, a low rumble. One of the horses stamped a hoof. Huron had the first watch from a stone outcrop a little way up the mountain. He would be coming to wake Rand for his turn soon. Rand rolled over and stopped. In the moonlight, he could see the shape of Celine bending over his saddlebags, her hands on the buckles. Her white dress gathered the faint light. Do you need something? She gave a jump and stared toward him.
You startled me.
He rolled to his feet, shedding the blanket and wrapping the cloak around himself, and went to her. He was sure he had left the saddlebags right by his side when he lay down. He always kept them close. He took them from her. All the buckles were fastened, even those on the side that held the damning banner.
How can my life depend on keeping it? If anybody sees it and knows what it is, I'll die for having it.
He peered at her suspiciously. Celine stayed where she was, looking up at him. The moon glistened in her dark eyes.
It came to me, she said, that I've been wearing this dress too long. I could brush it, at least, if I had something else to wear while I did. One of your shirts, perhaps.
Rand nodded, feeling a sudden relief. Her dress looked as clean to him as when he first saw her, but he knew that if a spot appeared on Egwene's dress, nothing would do but that she cleaned it immediately. Of course. He opened the capacious pocket into which he had stuffed everything except the banner and pulled out one of the white silk shirts.
Thank you.
Her hands went behind her back. To the buttons, he realized. Eyes wide, he spun away from her.
If you could help me with these, it would be much easier.
Rand cleared his throat. It would not be proper. It isn't as if we were promised or...
Stop thinking that. You can never marry anyone.
It just wouldn't be proper. Her soft laugh sent a shiver down his back as if she had run a finger along his spine. He tried not to listen to the rustlings behind him. He said, Tomorrow we'll leave for Kyrian.
And what of the Horn of Valir?
Maybe we were wrong. Maybe they are not coming here at all. Huron says there are a number of passes through Kinslayer's Dagger. If they went only a little further west, they do not have to come into the mountains at all.
But the trail we followed came here. They will come here. The Horn will come here. You may turn around now.
You say that, but we don't know. He turned, and the words died in his mouth. Her dress lay across her arm, and she wore his shirt, hanging in baggy folds on her. It was a long-tailed shirt, made for his height, but she was tall for a woman. The bottom of it came little more than halfway down her thighs. It was not as if he had never seen a girl's legs before. Girls in the Two Rivers always tied up their skirts to go wading in Waterwood ponds. But they stopped doing it well before they were old enough to braid their hair. And this was in the dark, besides. The moonlight seemed to make her skin glow.
What is it you don't know, Rand?
The sound of her voice unfroze his joints. With a loud cough, he whirled to face the other way.
Think of the glory, Rand.
Her hand touched his back, and he almost shamed himself with a squeak.
Think of the glory that will come to the one who finds the Horn of Valir. How proud I'll be to stand beside him who holds the horn. You have no idea the heights we will scale together, you and I. With the Horn of Valir in your hand, you can be a king. You can be another Arthur Hawkwing. You...
Lord Rand!
Hurin panted into the campsite.
My lord, they...
He skidded to a halt, suddenly making a gurgling sound. His eyes dropped to the ground and he stood wringing his hands.
Forgive me, milady. I didn't mean to... Forgive me.
Loyal sat up, his blanket and cloak falling away.
What's happening? Is it my turn to watch already?
He looked toward Rand and Selene, and even in the moonlight the widening of his eyes was plain. Rand heard Selene sigh behind him. He stepped away from her, still not looking at her.
Her legs are so white, so smooth.
What is it, Hurin?
He made his voice more moderate. Was he angry with Hurin, himself, or Selene?
No reason to be angry with her.
Did you see something, Hurin?
The sniffer spoke without raising his eyes.
A fire, my lord, down in the hills. I didn't see it at first. They made it small and hid it. But they hid it from somebody following them, not somebody ahead and up above. 2 miles, Lord Rand. Less than 3 for sure.
Fain, Rand said.
Ingtar would not be afraid of anyone following him.
It must be Fain.
Suddenly, he did not know what to do now. They had been waiting for Fain, but now that the man was only a mile or so away, he was uncertain.
In the morning we will follow. When Ingtar and the others catch up, we'll be able to point right to them.
So, Selene said, you will let this Ingtar take the Horn of Valir and the glory.
I don't want...
Without thinking, he turned, and there she was, legs pale in the moonlight, and as unconcerned that they were bare as if she were alone.
As if we were alone, the thought came. She wants the man who finds the horn.
3 of us cannot take it away from them. Ingtar has 20 lances with him.
You don't know you cannot take it. How many followers does this man have? You don't know that either.
Her voice was calm but intent.
You don't even know if these men camped down there do have the horn. The only way is to go down yourself and see. Take the Elantan. His kind have sharp eyes, even by moonlight, and he has the strength to carry the horn in its chest if you make the right decision.
She's right. You do not know for sure if it's Fain.
A fine thing it would be to have Hurin casting about for a trail that was not there, all of them out in the open if the real Dark Friends did finally come.
I will go alone, he said. Hurin and Loyal will stand guard for you.
Laughing, Selene came to him so gracefully it almost seemed she danced. Moonshadows veiled her face in mystery as she looked up at him, and mystery made her even more beautiful.
I am capable of guarding myself, until you return to protect me. Take the Elantan.
She is right, Rand,
Loyal said, rising.
I can see better by moonlight than you. With my eyes, we may not need to go as close as you would alone.
Very well.
Rand strode over to his sword and buckled it at his waist. Bow and quiver he left where they lay. A bow was not of much use in the dark, and he intended to look, not fight.
Hurin, show me this fire.
The sniffer led him scrambling up the slope to the outcrop, like a huge stone thumb thrust out of the mountain. The fire was only a speck. He missed it the first time Hurin pointed. Whoever had made it did not mean for it to be seen. He fixed it in his head. By the time they returned to the camp, Loyal had saddled Red and his own horse. As Rand climbed to the bay's back, Selene caught his hand.
Remember the glory, she said softly. Remember.
The shirt seemed to fit her better than he recalled, molding itself to her form. He drew a deep breath and took his hand back.
Guard her with your life, Hurin. Loyal?
He healed Red's flanks gently. The Ogier's big mount plodded along behind. They did not try to move quickly. Night shrouded the mountainside, and mooncast shadows made footing uncertain. Rand could not see the fire any longer. No doubt it was better hidden from eyes on the same level, but he had its location in his mind. For someone who had learned to hunt in the tangle of the Westwood, in the two rivers, finding the fire would be no great difficulty. And what then? Celine's face loomed before him. How proud I'll be to stand beside him who holds the horn.
Loyal,
he said suddenly, trying to clear his thoughts. What's this, a lantern she calls you?
It's the old tongue, Rand.
The Ogier's horse picked its way uncertainly, but he guided it almost as surely as if it were daylight.
It means brother, and is short for Tia Arvende a lantern. Brother to the trees. Tree brother. It is very formal, but then I've heard the Kyrianen are formal. The noble houses are, at least. The common people I saw there were not very formal at all.
Rand frowned. A shepherd would not be very acceptable to a formal Kyrianen noble house.
Light, Matt's right about you. You're crazy, and with a big head to boot. But if I could marry...
He wished he could stop thinking, and before he realized it, the void had formed within him, making thoughts distant things as if part of someone else. Saidin shone at him, beckoned to him. He gritted his teeth and ignored it. It was like ignoring a burning coal inside his head, but at least he could hold it at bay. Barely. He almost left the void, but the dark friends were out there in the night, and closer now. And the Trollocs. He needed the emptiness, needed even the uneasy calm of the void.
I don't have to touch it. I don't.
After a time, he reined in Red. They stood at the base of a hill, the wide-scattered trees on its slopes, black in the night.
I think we must be close by now, he said softly. Best we go the rest of the way on foot.
He slid from the saddle and tied the bay's reins to a branch.
Are you all right?
Loyal whispered, climbing down.
You sound odd.
I'm fine.
His voice sounded tight, he realized. Stretched. Saidin called to him.
No. Be careful. I can't be sure exactly how far it is, but that fire should be somewhere just ahead of us. On the hilltop, I think.
The Ogier nodded. Rand slowly stole from tree to tree, placing each foot carefully, holding his sword tight so it did not clatter against a tree trunk. He was grateful for the lack of undergrowth. Loyal followed like a big shadow. Rand could not see much more of him than that. Everything was moonshadows and darkness. Suddenly, some trick of the moonlight resolved the shadows ahead of him, and he froze, touching the rough bole of a leather leaf. Dim mounds on the ground became men wrapped in blankets, and apart from them, a group of larger mounds. Sleeping Trollocs. They had doused the fire. One moonbeam, moving through the branches, caught a shine of gold and silver on the ground halfway between the two groups. The moonlight seemed to brighten. For an instant, he could see clearly. The shape of a sleeping man lay close by to the gleam, but that was not what held his eye.
The chest, the horn,
and something atop it, a point of red flashing in the moonbeam.
The dagger. Why would Fane put...
Loyal's huge hand settled over Rand's mouth, and a good part of his face besides. He twisted to look at the Ogier. Loyal pointed off to his right slowly, as if motion might attract attention. At first, Rand could not see anything. Then a shadow moved not 10 paces away. A tall, bulky shadow, and snouted. Rand's breath caught. A Trolloc. It lifted its snout as if sniffing. Some of them hunted by scent. For an instant, the void wavered. Someone stirred in the Dark Friend camp, and the Trolloc turned to peer that way. Rand froze, letting the calm of emptiness envelop him. His hand was on his sword, but he did not think of it. The void was all. Whatever happened, happened. He watched the Trolloc without blinking. A moment longer, the snouted shadow watched the Dark Friend camp, then, as if satisfied, folded itself down beside a tree. Almost immediately, a low sound, like coarse cloth ripping, drifted from it. Loyal put his mouth close to Rand's ear.
"It's asleep,"
he whispered incredulously. Rand nodded. Tam had told him Trollocs were lazy, apt to give up any task but killing unless fear kept them to it. He turned back to the camp. All was still and quiet there again. The moonbeam no longer shone on the chest, but he knew now which shadow it was. He could see it in his mind, floating beyond the void, glittering, golden, chased with silver, in the glow of Sidene. The Horn of Valir and the dagger Matt needed, both almost within reach of his hand. Celine's face drifted with the chest. They could follow Fane's party in the morning and wait until Ingtar joined them. If Ingtar did come, if he still followed the trail without his sniffer. No. There would never be a better chance. All within reach of his hand. Celine was waiting on the mountain. Motioning for Loyal to follow, Rand dropped to his belly and crawled toward the chest. He heard the Ogier's muffled gasp, but his eyes were fixed on that one shadowed mound ahead. Dark friends and Trollocs lay to left and right of him, but once he had seen Tam stalk close enough to a deer to put his hand on its flank before the animal bounded off. He had tried to learn from Tam.
Madness.
The thought flew by dimly, almost out of reach.
This is madness. You are going mad.
Dim thoughts, someone else's thoughts. Slowly, silently, he slithered to that one special shadow and put out a hand. Ornate traceries worked in gold met his touch. It was the chest that held the Horn of Valir. His hand touched something else on the lid. The dagger, bare-bladed. In the dark, his eyes widened. Remembering what it had done to Matt, he jerked back, the void shifting with his agitation. The man sleeping nearby, no more than 2 paces from the chest, no one else lay so close by spans, groaned in his sleep and thrashed at his blankets. Rand allowed the void to sweep thought and fear away. Murmuring uneasily in his sleep, the man stilled. Rand let his hand go back to the dagger, not quite touching it. It had not harmed Matt in the beginning. Not much, at least. Not quickly. In one swift motion, he lifted the dagger, stuck it behind his belt, and pulled his hand away, as if it might help to minimize the time it touched his bare skin. Perhaps it would, and Matt would die without the dagger. He could feel it there, almost a weight pulling him down, pressing against him. But in the void, sensation was as distant as thought, and the feel of the dagger faded quickly to something he was used to. He wasted only a moment more staring at the shadow-wrapped chest. The horn had to be inside. But he did not know how to open it, and he could not lift it by himself. Then he looked around for Loyal. He found the Ogier crouched not far behind him, massive head swiveling as he peered back and forth from sleeping human dark friends to sleeping Trollocs. Even in the night, it was plain Loyal's eyes were as wide as they could go. They looked as big as saucers in the light of the moon. Rand reached out and took Loyal's hand. The Ogier gave a start and gasped. Rand put a finger across his lips, set Loyal's hand on the chest, and mimed lifting. For a time, it seemed forever in the night, with dark friends and Trollocs all around. It could not have been more than heartbeats. Loyal stared. Then, slowly, he put his arms around the golden chest and stood. He made it seem effortless. Ever so carefully, even more carefully than he had come in, Rand began to walk out of the camp, behind Loyal on the chest. Both hands on his sword, he watched the sleeping dark friends, the still shapes of the Trollocs. All those shadowed figures began to be swallowed deeper in the darkness as they drew away.
Almost free. We've done it.
The man who had been sleeping near the chest suddenly sat up with a strangled yell, then leaped to his feet.
It's gone! Wake, you filth! It's gone!
Fane's voice. Even in the void, Rand recognized it. The others scrambled erect, dark friends and Trollocs, calling to know what was happening, growling and snarling. Fane's voice rose to a howl.
I know it is you, Althor. You're hiding from me, but I know you're out there. Find him! Find him! Althor!
Men and Trollocs scattered in every direction. Wrapped in emptiness, Rand kept moving. Almost forgotten in entering the camp, Sidene pulsed at him.
He cannot see us, Loyal whispered low, once we reach the horses.
A Trolloc leaped out of the dark at them. Cruel eagle's beak and a man's face where mouth and nose should have been. Scythe-like sword already whistling through the air. Rand moved without thought. He was one with the blade. Cat dances on the wall. The Trolloc screamed as it fell, screamed again as it died.
Run, Loyal! Rand commanded.
Sidene called to him.
Run!
He was dimly aware of Loyal lumbering to an awkward gallop, but another Trolloc loomed from the night, boar-snouted and tusked, spiked axe raised. Smoothly, Rand glided between Trolloc and Ogier. Loyal must get the horn away. Head and shoulders taller than Rand, half again as wide, the Trolloc came at him with a silent snarl. The courtier taps his fan. No scream this time. He walked backwards after Loyal, watching the night. Sidene sang to him, such a sweet song. The power could burn them all. Burn Vane and all the rest to cinders.
No!
Two more Trollocs, wolf and ram, gleaming teeth and curling horns. Lizard in the thorn bush. He rose smoothly from one knee as the second toppled, horns almost brushing his shoulder. The song of Sidene caressed him with seduction, pulled him with 1,000 silken strings. Burn them all with the power. No,
no!
Better dead than that. If I were dead, it would be done with. A knot of Trollocs came into sight, hunting uncertainly. 3 of them. 4. Suddenly one of them pointed to Rand and raised a howl. The rest answered as they charged.
Let it be done with, Rand shouted, and leaped to meet them.
For an instant, surprise slowed them. Then they came on with guttural cries, gleeful, bloodthirsty, swords and maces raised. He danced among them to the song of Sidene. Hummingbird kisses the honey rose. So cunning, that song, filling him. Cat on hot sand. The sword seemed alive in his hands, as it had never been before, and he fought as if a heron-marked blade could keep Sidene from him. The heron spreads its wings. Rand stared at the motionless shapes on the ground around him.
Better to be dead, he murmured.
He raised his eyes, back up the hill toward where the camp lay. Fain was there, and dark friends and more Trollocs. Too many to fight, too many to face and live. He took a step that way, another.
Rand, come on!
Loyal's urgent whispered call drifted through the emptiness to him.
For life and the light, Rand, come on!
Carefully, Rand bent to wipe his blade on a Trolloc's coat. Then, as formally as if Lan were watching him train, he sheathed it.
Rand!
As though he knew of no urgency, Rand joined Loyal by the horses. The Ogier was tying the golden chest atop his saddle with straps from his saddlebags. His cloak was stuffed underneath to help balance the chest and the rounded saddle seat. Sidene sang no more. It was there, that stomach-turning glow, but it held back as if he truly had fought it off. Wonderingly, he let the void vanish. I think I'm going mad, he said. Suddenly realizing where they were, he peered back the way they had come. Shouts and howls came from 6 different directions, signs of search, but none of pursuit. Yet. He swung up onto Red's back.
Sometimes I do not understand 1/2 of what you say, Loyal said. If you must go mad, could it at least wait until we are back with the Lady Selene and Huron?
How are you going to ride with that in your saddle?
I will run.
The Ogier suited his words by breaking into a quick trot, pulling his horse behind him by the reins. Rand followed. The pace Loyal set was as fast as a horse could trot. Rand was sure the Ogier could not keep it for long, but Loyal's feet did not flag. Rand decided that his boast of once outrunning a horse might really be true. Now and again Loyal looked behind them as he ran, but the shouts of dark friends and howls of Trollocs faded with distance. Even when the ground began to slope upwards more sharply, Loyal's pace barely slowed and he trotted into their campsite on the mountainside with only a little hard breathing.
You have it.
Selene's voice was exultant as her gaze rested on the ornately worked chest on Loyal's saddle. She was wearing her own dress again. It looked as white as new snow to Rand.
I knew you would make the right choice. May I have a look at it?
Did any of them follow, my lord?
Huron asked anxiously. He stared at the chest with awe, but his eyes slid off into the night down the mountain.
If they followed, we'll have to move quick.
I do not think they did. Go to the outcrop and see if you can see anything.
Rand climbed down from his saddle as Huron hurried up the mountain. Selene, I don't know how to open the chest.
Loyal, do you?
The Ogier shook his head.
Let me try.
Even for a woman of Selene's height, Loyal's saddle was high above the ground. She reached up to touch the finely wrought patterns on the chest, ran her hands across them, pressed. There was a click, and she pushed the lid up, let it fall open. As she stretched on tiptoe to put a hand inside, Rand reached over her shoulder and lifted out the Horn of Valyr. He had seen it once before, but never touched it. Though beautifully made, it did not look a thing of great age or power. A curled golden horn, gleaming in the faint light with inlaid silver script flowing around the mouth of the bell. He touched the strange letters with a finger. They seemed to catch the moon.
Tia mi aven moredin isainde vadin, Selene said. The grave is no bar to my call.
You will be greater than Archer Hawkwing ever was.
I am taking it to Shinar, to Lord Agomar.
It should go to Tar Valon, he thought, but I'm done with Aes Sedai.
Let Agomar or Ingtar take it to them.
He set the horn back in the chest. It cast back the moonlight, pulled the eye.
That is madness, Selene said.
Rand flinched at the word.
Mad or not, it is what I'm doing. I told you, Selene, I want no part of greatness. Back there, I thought I did. For a while, I thought I wanted things.
Light, she's so beautiful. Egwene, Selene, I'm not worthy of either of them.
Something seemed to take hold of me.
Sa'adin came for me, but I fought it off with a sword. Or is that mad, too?
He breathed deeply. Shinar is where the Horn of Valyr belongs. Or if not there, Lord Agomar will know what to do with it. Huron appeared from up the mountain.
There's fire there again, Lord Rand, and bigger than ever. And I thought I heard shouting. It was all down in the hills. I don't think they've come up on the mountain yet.
You misunderstand me, Rand, Selene said. You cannot go back now. You are committed. Those friends of the dark will not simply go away because you've taken the horn from them. Far from it. Unless you know some way to kill them all, they will be hunting you now as you hunted them before.
No!
Loyal and Huron looked surprised at Rand's vehemence. He softened his tone.
I don't know any way to kill them all. They can live forever for all of me.
Selene's long hair shifted in waves as she shook her head.
Then you cannot go back, only onward. You can reach the safety of Kyrian's walls long before you could return to Shinar. Does the thought of a few more days in my company seem so onerous?
Rand stared at the chest. Selene's company was far from burdensome, but near her he could not help thinking things he should not. Still, trying to ride back north meant risking Fain and his followers. She was right in that. Fain would never give up. Ingtar would not give up either. If Ingtar came on southward, and Rand knew of no reason for him to turn aside, he would arrive at Kyrian soon or late.
Kyrian, he agreed. You will have to show me where you live, Selene. I've never been to Kyrian.
He reached to close the chest.
You took something else from the Friends of the Dark? Selene said. You spoke earlier of a dagger.
How could I forget?
He left the chest as it was and pulled the dagger from his belt. The bare blade curved like a horn, and the quillons were golden serpents. Set in the hilt, a ruby as big as his thumbnail winked like an evil eye in the moonlight. Ornate as it was, tainted as he knew it was, it felt no different from any other knife.
Be careful, Selene said. Do not cut yourself.
Rand felt a shiver inside. If simply carrying it was dangerous, he did not want to know what a cut from it would do.
This is from Shadar Logoth, he told the others.
It will twist whoever carries it for long, taint them to the bone the way Shadar Logoth is tainted. Without Aes Sedai healing, that taint will kill eventually.
So that is what ails Matt,
Loyal said softly.
I never suspected.
Huron stared at the dagger in Rand's hand and wiped his own hands in the front of his coat. The sniffer did not look happy. None of us must handle it any more than is necessary, Rand went on. I will find some way to carry it.
It is dangerous.
Selene frowned at the blade as if the snakes were real and poisonous.
Throw it away. Leave it or bury it if you wish to keep it from other hands, but be rid of it.
Matt needs it, Rand said firmly.
It is too dangerous. You said so yourself.
He needs it. The Aes Sedai said he would die without it to use in healing him.
They still have a string on him, but this blade will cut it.
Until I'm rid of it, and the horn, they have a string on me. But I'll not dance however much they pull. He set the dagger in the chest inside the curl of the horn. There was just room for it, and pulled the lid down. It locked with a sharp snap. That should shield us from it. He hoped it would. Lan said the time to sound most sure was when you were least certain.
The chest will surely shield us, Selene said in a tight voice. And now I mean to finish what is left of my night's sleep.
Rand shook his head. We are too close. Fane seems able to find me sometimes.
Seek the oneness if you are afraid, Selene said.
I want to be as far from those dark friends come morning as we can be. I will saddle your mare.
Stubborn.
She sounded angry, and when he looked at her, her mouth curved in a smile that never came close to her dark eyes.
A stubborn man is best once.
Her voice trailed off, and that worried him. Women often seem to leave things unsaid, and in his limited experience, it was what they did not say that proved the most trouble. She watched in silence as he slung her saddle onto the white mare's back and bent to fashion the girths.
Gather them all in, Fane snarled.
The goat-snouted Trollic backed away from him. The fire, piled high with wood now, lit the hilltop with flickering shadows. His human followers huddled near the blaze, fearful to be out in the dark with the rest of the Trollocs.
Gather them, everyone that still lives, and if anything to run, let them know they'll get what that one got.
He gestured to the first Trolloc that had brought him word Althor was not to be found. It still snapped at ground muddied with its own blood, hooves scraping trenches as they jerked.
Go,
Fane whispered, and the goat-snouted Trolloc ran into the night. Fane glanced contemptuously at the other humans.
They'll have their uses still.
Then turned to stare into the night toward Kinslayer's dagger. Althor was up there, somewhere in the mountains.
With the horn.
His teeth grated audibly at the thought. He did not know where exactly, but something pulled him toward the mountains. Toward Althor. That much of the Dark One's gift remained to him. He had hardly thought of it, had tried not to think of it, until suddenly, after the horn was gone, Althor was there, drawing him as meat draws a starving dog.
I am a dog no longer. A dog no longer!
He heard the others shifting uneasily around the fire, but he ignored them.
You will pay for what was done to me, Althor. The world will pay.
He cackled at the night with mad laughter.
The world will pay!